Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Good morning and welcome aboard. For the next 3 hours, we invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy the Mr. Fix-It Show. Your host, Lou Manfredini, is handy, witty, and some might even say the bomb. But wherever this journey takes you, you'll surely have an enjoyable time.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
At this time, please make sure your coffee is hot, radio is turned up, and tool belt is tightly fastened. All portable electronic devices must not be set to airplane mode in order to stream live.
I'm excited, and I feel relaxed, and I'm ready to party!
We know you have a choice with Bear Your Dial Lands on Saturday mornings. So on behalf of the entire cabin crew, we thank you for riding the airwaves of the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN.
Drinks for everybody but the pilot. It's a party. Got the 737 rocking like a G.
Good morning, Chicagoland. It's Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studios on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. And as a tradition, you know, when I fill in for Lou, we'll have Lindsay, we'll have a Bloody Mary bar coming in here. Kind of excited about that.
No offense, but I love it when you sit in. Lou doesn't do this.
We get some breakfast, too. I think it'll be coming in, too. Yeah, exactly.
Scratching me right where I am.
From Holtz in Park Ridge, and we're going to talk to Brad, one of the owners, during the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to you. Those will be coming in a little bit. And thank God Veronica Carter is here because she is my expert this morning. Are you going to do plumbing or electrical? Which one are you going to do?
Let's go with plumbing. I don't want to hurt anybody.
Okay. All right. Lindsay, which one are you going to take?
Oh, I'm going to go right in for electrical.
All right.
I want to hurt somebody.
I'm just going to tell you right now, duct tape is my answer to absolutely everything. Everyone who calls this morning is going to be duct tape this morning. Well, I'll tell you what, 312-981-7200. We got some callers coming in already. We'll take your calls and texts. We've got a lot of prizes to give away this morning. And joining me are the experts. They're going to take your call this morning, and we're going to introduce all of them to you this morning. First, we're going to talk to Joe Carone. Joe, good morning to you.
Morning.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, what your expertise is.
I'm an instructor for sheet metal workers, Smart 265 in Carroll Stream, Illinois, and I'm a would-be-day expert on HVAC questions.
Beautiful. All right. And I want smart.com as well. All right. John Donahue, or Joe Donahue, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been an electrician at Local 134 for 35 years. I'm currently an instructor at the IBW NECA Technical Institute. I'm teaching first-year apprentices on electrical safety and circuitry.
Very cool. Welcome aboard. Jim Majerowitz. How'd I do on that?
That's perfect.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm the training director with the Plumber School in Chicago. I come with 38 years of experience in the plumbing trade.
Excellent. And Tom Nordine. Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself, pal.
Sure. Currently, I am executive director for the Chicago Land Labor's Training and Apprenticeship Fund. It's located in Carroll Stream. We also have a facility in Chicago on Central. We have two facilities in for a combined space of about 150,000 square feet. We're on about 50 acres combined, and we're responsible for training 15,000 members of the Labor's District Council. And we train currently about 5,000 members a year. I've been in the business for 45 years plus. I work for a general contractor and partner for a general contractor for 39 years. So I've been around just a little bit too long.
So you guys know what you're talking about. Hello.
I hope so.
Okay.
Crickets.
Joe, Jim, and Tom. Very cool. You know, speaking of just guys hanging out, having Bloody Marys, talking about tools and stuff, went to the auto show last night. They had that big night for charity.
Yeah,
it was very cool. It's the first time I've ever done that and saw a lot of our friends over from the station over there in Tony Esposito hanging out at the show and saw my friend Nancy Liu from WGN, Cheryl Scott from Channel 7. It was fun to see all that. But I love that they do this. Like, you get to pick your charity. Mm-hmm. For everything that's so you get to, you know, the 100 Club, which does such great work for Chicago's and in the state's police and firemen. Joe Ahern runs that. It was for Catholic Charities of Chicago. JDRF, of course, was there as well. So it was a really, really cool event. But it got
Misericordia.
Misericordia as well. Hello. That's right. That's right. Thanks for that plug. But it was thousands of people in black tie just hanging out, eating, drinking, and looking at cars. It was a kind of a cool
thing.
That's
awesome.
There was a couple, and you know, and my wife looked just fabulous at the event, but there were some people that were dressed up like they were going to prom.
Oh, I've been there before. I know. I've seen it.
Big, poofy, like, maybe they just didn't make it. Maybe they weren't asked.
Lois makes the joke that by the end of the night, all the women are holding their heels because
it's true.
Their feet are so bad from walking around.
Yeah, Cadillac and Toyota were passing out slippers all night, so they were very popular.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, they had little fuzzy slippers that they passed out to everybody. So it was kind of a cool thing. Kind of a cool thing. Well, I'll tell you what. There's all kinds of cool things happening in Chicago, and one of those is Laverne, and she's got a question about is it too cold to paint? Laverne, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
We went to paint in the basement. The walls are all outside walls, but they are covered with wallboard down the stairs and into the basement. Is it too cold yet?
Well, if you take a look at the can of paint that you purchased or will purchase, there'll be manufacturer's suggestions on temperatures. It'll give a high and it'll give a low. I would recommend you look at that. But my experience has been if it's cold to the touch, it's too cold, the paint will sag.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Laverne, thanks for the call, dear. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
All right. We got Rosemary from Chicago. Rosemary, welcome into the Mr. Fix-It Show.
Well, thanks so much. This is where I come for my advice for sure. I recently had two new electrical fixtures installed, one in the dining room, one in the kitchen. But I live in a condo, so these are very close together. And now I get terrible static in my radio, which is in the kitchen.
So, you have the radio plugged into the outlet, and the outlet's probably on the same circuit with those fixtures, I would imagine. I really don't know about a feedback from that. It doesn't really make sense. You have a dimmer on those, or
yes, on both of them.
Does it seem to change when you use your dimmer?
Not really. No.
Not really. Okay. Well, usually that's a grounding problem. And does that radio have batteries in it?
No.
No. So
it's an under the
counter, right. So it's just plugged in the outlets on the wall, huh?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now I did plug the radio. I took an extension cord and I plugged it into a wall, the socket down the hallway, about maybe 10 feet away, but yeah, in a different area, and it didn't help.
Didn't help at all, huh?
No.
Because usually if you're on a different circuit, it might help. Well, the only thing I can tell you is you may have a problem with your ground and you're getting a back feed on that, or you have a bad radio. Did it happen before your fixtures were installed?
No, it did not. But I took my transistor radio. I thought, well, I'll use my transistor radio. No, that gets terrible static, too.
I really don't know. It's like one of those Bernoullian principles that I'm really not aware of with the radio. So you're going to have to
maybe try to find another outlet to plug it into and just see
if that
works.
Well, she did that. She went down the hall, right? Yeah. It's hard to say. And it just happened since they did that, huh?
Yes. Before that, I was fine. Why didn't I leave those? Why did I leave well enough alone? I never dreamed I was going to cause another problem.
You know, what happens now is all these people will start texting us their solutions. So, Rosemary, if anybody texts in an answer that might help you, maybe Dave can relay it to you over the air. So keep listening.
Great.
Thanks, Rosemary.
Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. It is 7:17. It's the Mr. Fix-It Show, 312-981-7200. We're going to give away, let's do a Lou Malnati's gift certificate to the next caller after the break next on 720 WGN. Day player in for Lou Manfredini and the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with our team of experts here on 720 WGN. Segment sponsored by Ace Hardware and Lindemann Chimney Company. Gentlemen, how are the bloodies this morning? Everything getting you wide-eyed and bushy-tailed here to answer some questions?
They're awesome.
Yes. They're pretty good. Lindsay?
Excellent.
What? I'm sorry. I was mid-sip.
How was your Bloody Mary this morning?
Oh, my God. I've never been to this place before. Have you been?
I have. Holtz
and
Park Ridge.
Park Ridge.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the Old Pines department store, the men's clothing store that was there for... I was telling the guys in the back that I bought my first communion suit there, I think, sometime in the 70s. And it was a bank before that, so I think that store opened up in the 50s. It was a bank in the 20s and 30s, something like that. But, yeah, we'll have them in here later to tell some stuff. They've got some gift cards to give away as well. All right, we're sitting with Joe, Jim, and Tom with you, answering your questions. And 312-981-7200. And we got a call from Jim from Plainfield. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
What's your question, pal?
Yes, I have a home that's approximately 14 years old, and I'm interested in replacing my windows. And I thought maybe that you could tell me which is a good quality replacement window that and company that I could use.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Fine.
For replacement windows, you really need to get online and get educated a little bit. Google the product that you think you might be using. Do a little homework and kind of understand what you're looking for so you're well-armed when you interview these prospective contractors.
Okay.
There's a lot of the windows nowadays are pretty much the same. There's not a lot of difference between them. There's a lot of good windows, Pella's, Anderson. There's great products out there, but try to stay away from the big replacement type people. I think you'd get better products from local distributors.
Okay. One other question. We were told that the inserts that they put in these windows, decorative inserts or whatever you call them, are no good, that that's what causes the windows to go bad and lose their efficiency. Do you know anything if that's true or not?
I would keep them out of the windows. They're really not necessary. If you like the look of it, put something on the surface of the glass.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Just a couple texts came in. 815, the last caller, let's see here, about the static. If she's using LED lights or those curly fluorescent ones, which is a CFL, that could be the problem. I think I read online that if you're using LED lights, they have a different kind of bulb in one of the fixtures. It happened to my radio. My husband's electrician, then Matt even stumped him. And then somebody else, sometimes the fluorescent lamps will cause radios to static if close by. So maybe take a look at that.
Yeah, those LED drivers have a driver in them.
Okay.
It's just not a light bulb. It's like a solid-state device. So, that could give you like a harmonics in your line. So that's a possibility.
630 says you can buy a filter to plug in the outlets that will block the radio interference. A filter? What would that be?
This is a new one to me.
Yeah,
so
okay. All right.
Find out, let me know.
Okay. I can do that. Hey, Mark, you're on 720 WGN. What's your question, pal?
This is me now, huh?
This is you now.
Good morning. I'm glad you're here. I'm having an electrical surge issue. When my circulator pump on my boiler comes on, the lights dim. They grow dimmer. I've put the circulator pump on a separate 20-amp circuit. And I've even moved it from one side of the bus bar to the other, thinking it was drawing from that same bus bar. And the issue still occurs. What do you think it is, or where should I look?
So what makes you think it's a surge or your problem? What do you think?
Well, the lights kind of grow a little dim when I hear the circulator pump motor click on.
Okay, and what's the rating on the circulator motor?
Couldn't find it, but I put it on a 20 amper.
Yeah, you may need more on that circulator pump than you're giving it.
Because it's just a small house, a very tiny boiler.
Sure, sure. It's That's like a common that's a common problem when it's not getting enough voltage to the motor, so you're dropping like. So that could be your problem.
Really, because it's a 110 and all that. It's not a 220 or anything like that.
Right, but you don't know. It really doesn't have a nameplate on the motor.
Yes, it has. Right, okay. It's a Canadian-made model. It's not a Bell and Gossett, but it's performed well for 5 years now.
And it's just starting now.
Well, I'm noticing it now because I've been in the house more.
Oh, has it occurred all along, or?
I'm going to say I haven't noticed it prior.
Yeah, you know, you may need a new motor on there also. I mean, the motors do go bad.
Yes, they do. I've had that happen.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm just glad you're here. I just wanted to run all these things by you because see if maybe something I overlooked. But
I have Joe, our heating and air conditioning fellow here. He's probably
does the lights dim when the pump first turns on?
Yeah, they don't go totally dim, but you see that the brightness dims.
There's a such thing called inrush current. When the motor first takes off, it'll draw higher amperage, and then when it gets to running speed, it'll go back to nameplate amperage.
Mm-hmm.
So as the motor gets older, you might have that problem. When it first starts out, there's a big rush of current, and then it goes back to normal. You should think about getting a qualified technician out there to possibly replace that motor.
All right, that's not too hard to do. I put the pump in, so.
It's not always just the motor, too. It's sometimes the mechanicals that are making it work harder.
Yes.
So,
but it's all located within the circular pump, then.
Sure.
The circulating pump. That seems to be the issue.
Sometimes the pump itself that the motor's attached to is not operating.
Bearings or something.
Sure, it could be something like that. And then that motor's working a lot harder, so you'll notice that kind of thing.
Okay. Thanks for the suggestions. I'll look into it.
Absolutely. Mark, and hang on the line. We'll give you a Lumel Nowdy's gift certificate. Lindsay will get your information, all right?
Oh, fine. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, buddy. All right, 312-981-7200. Our experts are ready to take your calls again after the news with Veronica next on 720 WGN. Wake up, Chicagoland. It's Dave Player in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with our team of experts, Joe, Jim, and Tom, here on 720 WGN. We're taking your calls. We're taking your texts, 312-981-7200. And let's see here. Mark's got a question here, calling from Lakemore. Good morning to you, Mark.
How are you doing, guys?
Excellent, excellent. What's your question, pal?
I finished my basement, and I drywalled the ceiling, so I boxed in the ductwork. Now, every time my furnace kicks on, it bangs. I was wondering if that's from the lack of it being able to expand in that ductwork, because I put, you know, 2x2s around it and drywalled it.
Did you put the 2x2s resting against the ductwork?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. What happens is that when your furnace fan first comes on, pressure builds up in the ductwork, and that duct wants to expand a little. We call that static pressure. So by having materials against that duct and the duct not able to flex a little bit, you're going to have what we call an oil canning effect, where you're going to hear a banging in your ductwork.
Is there anything I can do to relieve that?
The only thing you could do is try to remove the material that's surrounding the ductwork, resting against it.
All right, is it going to cause any problems besides just hearing the noise?
No, it's not going to cause any problems.
Okay, then I'll have to live with it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it, pal. So I got a text from 815. The guy with the circulator pump dimming the lights, have him check the main lugs coming into his breaker box. Had a situation several summers ago where the wiring had got compressed on the main lugs and there was an extra resistance there that was causing everything in the house to dim when the air conditioner came on. I tightened the lugs and it all came out nicely.
Well, they do loosen up over time, the main lugs that come in. And when you have a loose electrical connection, it produces heat. And you could have that kind of a problem. There's a lot of things that can happen with that kind of a situation.
All right. Let's see here. Ann, you're on 720 WGN. Welcome to the Mr. Fix-It Show. What's your question?
Good morning, everyone. My question is regarding the basement. We're redoing it, my husband and I, and it's insulating. I've been reading controversy on if you should be putting the pink foam as well as the fiberglass insulation or just one or the other. We actually did put up the pink foam already because we had to make a decision. But I'm hearing that too much insulation can cause mold as well. So what is your thoughts?
Hi, Ann. There's a lot of controversy, as you already know, about the to insulate or not to insulate. I don't think you can go wrong with any type of insulation that you put in the basement, but what's most important is there's got to be an airspace between the insulation and the concrete foundation. It has to be at least an inch so it can breathe, and that's to keep the mold from growing behind there.
So if we've already put up the pink insulation that's stuck to the walls?
Yeah, that's not a good idea, but if there's a... It needs to have some air so it can breathe. And it keeps the moisture from building up as well.
So at this point, should we even put the fiberglass or just leave it as that?
I wouldn't even bother putting it in.
The fiberglass?
Yes, I wouldn't put the fiberglass in. As long as you have the foam on there now, I would just make sure you don't get the drywall too close to the foam. Leave at least an inch and a half and leave it as it is.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Ann. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Ron, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning to you. Ron, you there, buddy? Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. I currently have a 20-year-old house with an air conditioner and furnace that are both 20 years old. It's a temp star furnace. I'm not looking at replacing it today or anything, but is that something that I would gain efficiency from by replacing in the next year or so, or can I just wait until it goes because it's running properly? I have no issues, but my wife thinks that we should upgrade for the efficiency.
Yes, you will gain more efficiency with newer equipment. Usually the lifespan, they say, on a furnace and or air conditioner is about 15 to 25 years. Newer efficiency models will save on your energy bills. But remember that when you go to replace your furnace or AC, you want to have a qualified contractor come out there and actually do a load calculation of your house. So you make sure that the equipment that's being installed is properly sized for your residential needs.
Okay, so, but I really don't hurt anything right now by leaving if it's working. Is that fair to say?
No, if you maintain your equipment properly, what I mean by that is every year you should have your furnace and AC maintained, cleaned, make sure it's running at peak efficiency. Right now you really don't have a problem, but in the future if you do want to replace your furnace or air conditioner, the new standards out there will save you money in the long run if you do replace to a brand new system.
Okay, outstanding. I appreciate your help.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Ron. That's Joe Carone, HVAC Tech and iwantsmart.com. I've got a text coming in, 630. How can I repair a crack in my ceiling that leads to the foyer and hallway? Ceiling to wall is okay, just problem at the throughways.
They all crack. There's always that kind of a problem. I have it in my house. Every time I paint, I have to fill in the cracks and go over it. I don't know how you get around
it.
Houses move.
All right, we got a call from Carl. Carl, you're on 720 WGN. Welcome to the Mr. Fix-It Show.
I have a problem. I put the carpet tile over one in floor, and I want to take it off now. Now I notice the glue from the carpet tile is sticking to the wooden floor. And it looks bad. I want to know how I could take it off, the glue from the wooden floor. It's stuck to it. Now it's so hard to get off. I don't know what to use.
Hey, Carl, where's the floor at?
It's in the dining room. I put over the wooden floors.
Yeah, you. And what are you going to put down in place of it?
Oh, I want to go back to the wooden floor. I don't want no carpet tile in there.
Okay,
I'm taking them off.
You're going to put what in place of the carpet tile?
Yeah, I'm taking those carpet tiles off, like 12 by 12, And I just want just the wooden floor just on there now. But the glue is sticking on to
it. Oh, you've got hardwood floor down and right. Somebody carpeted on top of it?
Right.
Oh, that's messy. That's,
How do I need to take the glue off now?
Yeah, anything that you try to use now, you're going to damage that hardwood floor. It's almost impossible to take it off. You could try to get as much of the bulk as you can off if it's not real heavy. And they've got the barrel sanders, which you're going to have to use anyway to sand the floor, and try to use a coarse sandpaper first to take the bulk of the glue off, and then go to a finer sandpaper as you go down. But try that. It's a shame to throw away the hardwood floor.
Right. Oh, okay. I'll just try that then.
Yeah.
There's no liquids. There ain't no other kind of liquid stuff I could put on there. Take it off or no?
Well, there is, but you run the chance of staining the hardwood floor underneath, and then you can't get the stain out.
Okay, then I'll just have to do that then.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call, Carl. Appreciate it. That's Tom Newerden. He's the executive director of the Chicago Laborers Training and Apprentice Fund. Joyce, let's see here. You're on 720 WGN. What's your question, Joyce?
Yeah, hi. My question is for the electrician. My kitchen light, it's been flickering, like when you're blinking your eyes, that kind of thing. But now I notice it's starting to go dim. But also, once when I had the bathroom light on, also, it started going to dim. So now my kitchen light, I'm in the kitchen cooking, and then it goes like almost dusk dark, you know. And I'm like, what is this? But what I did call a reputable electric company. It came out, and he noticed and saw the lights, and he said, oh, it's a pole problem. So I called the utility company, and they came out and said, no, get your electrician back out here. Oh, he came back out here, and he did something with the circuit breaker and, you know, downstairs. He took something out, and then it's still doing the same thing, but now it's really going dust dark. So what do you think about that? But then, you know what happened also, sir? What also happened is I said, I cut the lights on this, all in the front, the first, fourth level, and now when it does, when it flickers the other lights, too. So I was wondering, should I stay with the same utility electric company? Or what do you think I should do?
I think you have a loose connection somewhere.
Just a loose connection? Is that
yes,
a loose connection is doing that?
Yeah, he was in, he took down the old fixtures, right, and he moved around the wires. Probably loosened something up, so if you go through and you tighten everything up, you may eliminate your problem.
Oh, okay. So I have them come back out and tell them to go through them. I should have them do that.
Yeah, just go through and tighten everything up.
Okay, then. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. And that was Joe Donahue from Electricians Local 134. 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls. We'll take your texts. And I think we're going to have a Mr. Fix-It Lou's Crew t-shirt that we're going to give away to somebody who's got a question for our experts. 312-981-7200. We'll be back after this on 720 WGN.
Come on over here, Ron. Let me show you what I'm doing. Taking advantage of some of the time off to add a whole new wing on here. I'm going to rip these walls out and, of course, rewire it.
Yeah, you're going to make it all 220?
Yeah, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
Well, you sound like a pretty handy guy.
Now back to Lou on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And it's Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show here on 720 WGN, along with our experts this morning, Joe Carone, HVAC Tech with iwantsmart.com, Joe Donahue, Electricians Local 134, Jim Majerowitz, Churning Director, Journeyman Plumbers, UA Local 130, Tom Nordine, Executive Director of the Chicago Laborers Training and Apprentice Fund. Thanks for being here, guys. So, great gift for Valentine's Day for the guy, the lady in your life. Lou always says, happy wife, happy life, is the Skill Power Screwdriver, and it's got a wine opener attachment. Did you see this thing, guys? It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's kind of a cool little gift, something that was sent over to Lou, and Lindsay has the details.
Normally, I wouldn't say wine and power tools go well together. But since it's Valentine's weekend and this is the Mr. Fix-It Show, I thought maybe we could combine the two. This weekend's new Tulu 2 is the Skill IXO Vivo Power Corkscrew. The 4-volt max screwdriver comes with a unique corkscrew attachment that makes opening a bottle of wine that much more fun. The drill's lithium-ion battery holds a charge for up to 18 months, so it's always ready to use when you need it. Perfect for the handyman or woman that loves a good bottle of wine. Great for get-togethers, just because, or Valentine's Day. The Skill Vivo kit also includes a foil cutter, wine stopper, and a 5-piece bit set. Who knew? Hello, best of both worlds here. You can find the Vivo Power Corkscrew on Amazon.com. It goes for about $25. I'll put all this information up on Lou's Mr. Fix-It page on WGNRadio.com, also on his Facebook page, and also on VibeScore. Download the free app on your iPhone and vibe about it. That's this week's New Tulu 2.
All right, there you have it. Hello.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, this is very cool. This is very cool because, I mean, this is multi-function. I generally don't like buying something that is household gadgety for my wife for any occasion for fear of being beaten. It is for both of you. Exactly, exactly. You never buy something that plugs in, but this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. What kind of wine would you open up with this, Lindsay?
Well, I'm a white myself. Uh-huh. Lou always says he only drinks white if we're out of red or if they're out of red. But
okay, fair enough.
I'm not a big red wine drinker. I know it's probably better for your health.
Does it open up a whiskey bottle? Because that's what probably I would use.
Oh, that one, you just twist that right off with your hands, with your teeth. Get right in there.
I think so. So it's a Skill Vivo Power Screwdriver, and I've got some information on it here somewhere. All right, here it is. So truly life made easier. Do-it-yourselfer. Corkscrew is a fun, this power corkscrew is a fun, unique way to open a bottle, impress your friends and family at your next party, holiday dinner, neighborhood get-together with this 4-volt lithium-ion power corkscrew that also includes a foil cutter and a wine bottle stopper. So you got the whole package in here, too. That's pretty cool. So 4 volts of maximum power, LED sight light for greater visibility, because I'm blind now unless I'm wearing my glasses, lithium-ion battery that holds a charge up to 18 months, and it's backed by a 1-year warranty. This looks cool. So convenient controls, indicator lights, better light for better visibility. Again, it's the Vivo Power Screwdriver by Skill. Very, very, very cool stuff. Hey, we'll take our next caller, 312-981-7200. Bob, you're on 720 WGN. What's your question, pal?
Hey, terrific. Hey, listen, I've got a wall. It's about 10 feet wide, 8 feet high, and somebody, probably about 40 years ago, glued glass mirrors on that wall. Now, this is glued directly on a sheetrock, and I'm wondering how to get those things off of there without damaging that sheetrock.
Many times when you get a mirror or a piece of glass glued onto something, you will tape the mirror and then you'll break it to get it off the wall. So you'll tape the whole mirror. This way, when you break it and peel it off, you're not shattering glass all over the place.
Yeah, these are all individual squares. They're 12-inch by 12-inch.
Yeah, that would be in 12 by 12-inch will make it much easier to tape and take one and break one out at a time and not make that much of a mess and chances of getting cut.
Yeah, but what about the damage to the sheetrock behind it? Because we don't know what's really, whether they use some kind of a special glue on it or whatever it was.
I'm sure you'll have to sand and scrape and then do some respackling on that drywall when you're finished.
Hi, Bob. You're really stuck because now you know why they've been on there 40 years.
Nobody wanted. They were on there when I bought the house, you know.
Yeah, and they probably should still be on there when you sell it.
Well, we went to put it on the market, and people walked in and looked at it, and they said, those glass mirrors aren't very appealing, you know.
Yeah, no, but they're not.
You take those things off the wall, it's going to make the room much smaller. I mean, these glass mirrors really make the room look really nice and large, you know.
Yeah, sure they do, but it looks a lot better with them off.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have to break them and be safe about it. Make sure if you do it, you're wearing proper hand protection and eye protection. And I think you're going to end up doing a lot of patching on the drywall. And When it's all said and done, you have all the mirrors off. It may be easier just to overlay it with a quarter inch drywall instead of doing all that patching and avoid that wavy look idea. When it's yeah. done.
Well, that's going to really show a big seam if you go and put another layer of sheetrock on there.
A taper will be able to tape it in and it'll look guaranteed look a lot better than patching it.
I was going to take like maybe some mud or something like that, you know, and just cover the whole sheetrock, you know, after I get the mirrors off in case there's any, you know, gouges or anything like that in the sheetrock because I know it's covered with a paper.
Yeah, you have glue on there for those mirrors too, and then you'd have to get the glue off. An aunt of mine had the same problem, and the painter ended up redoing the whole wall after the glass came off.
Wow. I was going to take a sander to it. Maybe a real mild sandpaper might be able to take some of that glue off there. Do you think so?
Yeah, it may, but I think you're going to get dust in every little crevice in the whole house that you would never believe this dust will travel to.
Oh, I can believe that. I mean, this is in the living room, you know. I mean, what a heck of a mess, you know. Yeah.
That's why I say I think you're much better off if you pull the tiles off, pull the glue off, and take a thin layer of drywall, quarter inch, and hire somebody to come in and tape it and do it right. They could even tape it where they're not so intrusive with the dust.
Okay. Well, listen, I certainly really appreciate your expertise, and we'll take a crack at it and see what happens.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Thanks. Enjoy your Saturday, pal.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
All right. Mary, Paul, Roy, and all of you, hang on. We're going to take your calls and text next, 312-981-7200 after a quick break on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Dave Player in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with our team of experts here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200, taking your calls, your questions, your problems, your issues, not your personal issues, really just your home improvement issues today. Well, we could take some of those calls. It's Valentine's Day. Maybe somebody's ticked off at somebody. We could do that, too. What do you think, Lindsay? All right, we're going to reintroduce all of our experts here today. Let's see. Let's start with Joe Carone. Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm the senior service technician trainer for the employers of iwantsmart.com and sheet metal worker Smart Local 265. I've been in the sheet metal HVAC trade since 1987, and I'm currently a full-time instructor for sheet metal workers Local 265.
Very cool. Well, thank you for being here. Joe Donahue, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been a member of Electricians Union, Local 134, for 35 years. I'm currently an instructor at the IBW NECA Technical Institute, and I'm teaching first-year apprentices, basic electricity and safety.
Very cool, Joe. Jim Majerowitz, tell us a little bit about you.
I'm the training director for Chicago Journeyman Plumbers Local 130 in Chicago. We handle 17 counties in the northeastern Illinois area. I come with 38 years of experience to the trade.
Very cool. And then we've got Tom Nordine. Tom, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I'm executive director of the Chicagoland Labor's Training and Apprenticeship Fund. We are responsible for training 15,000 members safety. We do underground piping, tunneling, scaffold building, brick mason assisting. We do site survey. And I did say safety, and that's probably our number one, our best thing that we do, because we really are concerned about getting our members home safe to their families every day.
Very cool. Jojo, Jim, and Tom, thank you all for being here. All right, we'll take a call from Paul from Antioch. You're on 720 WGN. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning. My question is, if you have a concrete floor moving away from the foundation, is there any way to test for mold within that crack?
Yeah, there's ways to test, but you're going to have to look on the internet for professionals Did you say there is signs of mold, or you don't know and you're just checking?
I don't know. I'm checking. I just want to be sure that there isn't.
Yeah. What are you trying? I mean, 25-year-old
building with the separation from the wall. There's been leaks along that wall into the crack in the foundation wall and the concrete floor. There's a crack about an inch or so.
Yeah. If you don't see any signs of it, it probably doesn't exist. But if you're suspicious about it, it's not something to play around with, and you need to get a specialist in that field, and they could do some testing. It's because if it does exist, you can't leave it in there.
Hey, Paul, there's actually a kit or that Lou has talked about. I'm not 100% sure this would work for it, but it's called Healthful Home. If you wanna take a look online, I know it's myhealthfulhome.com. It's a mold test kit that is kind of a DIY thing.
Okay.
So take a look at that.
All right.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for the call, pal. All right. Tony, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question about your furnace.
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, pal.
My thermostat is set at 73, but reading only 65 in the house. I wonder if, on the thermostat, there's the automatic and the fan. Is it a good idea to put the fan on or not?
Good morning, Tony.
Yes. I had a question about my furnace.
No, go ahead, Joe.
Yes, go, Tony.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that your thermostat's set for 73, but your house is actually 65 degrees?
That's right.
And your furnace is able to keep your house at 65? Are you sure that your furnace is not going off and then coming back on?
No, it's constantly running.
It's constantly running.
No, I tried to put it on fan, but that didn't help either, so I pushed it back.
Is your heat constantly running or the fan constantly running?
I don't know which way. I can hear it running. I don't know which is which now.
On your thermostat, you're going to have switches.
Yes.
You're going to have cool, off, and heat.
I got it on heat.
Okay, and then the other side, you're going to have an auto and an on.
Auto and fan, I got.
Fan, yes. That is, if you have a fan on, your fan's going to run continuously.
All right.
If your fan is in the auto position, it's only going to run when there's a call for heating or cooling.
So it's best to keep it on auto, I think?
If you want to keep even temperatures throughout your house, we do recommend that you keep your fan on.
Okay. Because
it'll distribute the air evenly throughout your house. But I guess my concern is that you're telling me that if you have your temperature set at 73, but your house is only getting to 65,
right?
I would want to know that is your heat actually coming on in your furnace?
Okay.
Can you check your air filter? Have you been changing them every 3 months?
Yes, that's changed. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I recommend is that you should get a qualified technician out there to look at it.
Okay.
Because I have a suspicion that maybe your furnace is shutting off and coming back on to heat.
Mm-hmm.
The fan could be running, but maybe the heat is coming on and off. And through a proper clean and check, a qualified technician probably will diagnose the problem and help you out.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem.
Thanks for the call, buddy.
All right.
Mary, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question for our experts.
Yes, I had one for plumbing. I was told if you put bleach down the drains that this would help it from clogging.
I don't think putting bleach down a drain's gonna do anything for fixing any clogs or slowing any clogs down. In fact, bleach is very corrosive, and anytime you're putting that down any type of pipes, no matter what the material is, it may be damaging your pipes. So it's best not to put any type of corrosives down your drain at all. You know, just so that you don't have to change pipes throughout your house over a time frame. If you put too much down, who knows what's going to happen to the pipes behind the walls.
Is there anything you can suggest? It's more, you know, that won't hurt the pipes?
Well, you know, most of the time you don't, you know, the pipes will stay clean indefinitely, and you don't have to put anything in the pipes.
I mean, as far as keeping the drains better?
No, the drain, there's nothing that you need to put down the pipes to keep the drain. You know, if the drains do get slow or get plugged up, it's just a general maintenance, and you'd have somebody come out and clean them out.
Mary, I know a product that Lou really likes. If there's ever a clog, he always says stay away from Drano, but he loves the product InstaFlow.
Instaflow, okay.
It's F-L-O, not F-L-O-W, just Instaflow, F-L-O-W, or F-L-O.
Okay. All right, Mary?
Yeah.
All right, thanks for the call, dear. Roy, you're on 720 WGN. What's your question? Roy, good morning.
Hi. I'm on a well. I've been in the house since it was new for 20 years. I replaced the hot water tank about a year ago. Never had any kind of smell on a water softener good system. I replaced the hot water tank 8 months ago. I start getting a bad smell just on the hot water. So I was told the rod inside, you need to replace it. So I replaced the aluminum rod, and I thought, well, because I never had problems before, there's two types of rods. I put the magnesium rod in, and here it is a couple months later, and I've got the smell back.
And you went through both of them. You've had the aluminum one in there and the magnesium, and you're getting the same smell with both of them?
Right. Someone said that to remove it, but my old hot water tank had one in it when, after 20 years, I replaced it. So I'm afraid to do that. I just don't know what to do with it. It's a rotten egg smell.
You went through both the first two steps of going with the magnesium and then the aluminum, and then the third step would be going to remove it totally and see what the outcome is. Be aware, though, you are voiding the warranty of the water heater, but you're going to eliminate the smell by plugging that off and removing it.
Well, I take the chance of damaging the hot water tank.
What the possibility of happening, the lifespan will be shortened on the water heater. All right? But that's the answer. You know, you'll see right away in a short period of time if the smell does go away. And at that point, then you know that you can't be using magnesium or aluminum anodes in that tank. All right, so that's your next step is to try. And it's gonna, you know, the worst case scenario, it's going to shorten the lifespan of the water heater.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Roy. Appreciate it. 312-981-7200. And we'll be back after this on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with our experts here on 720 WGN, taking your calls, your questions, your problems, your issues at 312-981-7200. And this segment is sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. We've got a call on the line. It's John from Crystal Lake. You got a call for our experts, buddy?
Yeah, I do. Good morning, guys. I have two bathrooms upstairs. And when I redid the second one, I tied the exhaust line for the fan into the existing line for the other bathroom, and then they both get vented out the top of the roof. Since doing that, I've discovered that when we run the shower in the one bathroom, I'm getting humidity in the other bathroom. Do I need to split the exhaust lines off and have it vented to two separate places in the roof, or is there something else that I can do to eliminate that issue?
Joe, what do you think?
I would recommend that you vent both of them with separate vents. Possibly is happening right now, since you tied both vent fans into one pipe going out the roof, when one comes on, it's actually forcing the humidity down through the other vent and into the exhaust fan that's not on. Usually on exhaust fans, there's a damper in there called a backdraft damper that helps eliminate that situation. You might try to put a backdraft damper, but I would recommend that you run both of them separately.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. I just before I did one thing and didn't work. I will get a roofing contractor up there, and we'll get some things going. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, John, hang on the line. I've got a Lou's Mr. Fix-It Lou Crew T-shirt, courtesy of your friends at Fox Home Center and LSIP, created by the Rags of Honor, helping veterans get back on their feet. Hang on the line, buddy.
All right, thanks, Dave.
All right. All right, so we've been enjoying, gentlemen, as you know, the signature Bloody Marys. Tom, I know you really like the bacon.
Yes.
The bacon in the Bloody Mary.
Awesome.
And on the side as well. And breakfast from a new place in Park Ridge, and that is Holtz. And joining us for a bit to talk about his place is Brad Doyle. Brad, good morning to you.
Morning to you, Dave. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, first of all, for treating our group of experts. It's our first time on the air here, so we're very happy to have them here and very happy that you were able to treat us to some breakfast.
We're happy to do it. Hope you enjoyed the Tito's Bloody Marys and all the breakfasts. We are happy to be here and glad you guys enjoyed everything.
Well, you know, you are in the old, if you're familiar with Park Ridge, folks, this is in the old Pines Menswear building. And I remember getting my communion suit, my graduation suit there back in the day. It was there from 1952 to 2013. It was a bank before that, wasn't it?
That's correct. Yeah, we left actually. There's some beautiful terrazzo floors still that were left over from the bank. And then during our build out, we restored the ceiling as well. So we wanted to leave a lot of the nice kind of architectural points that have been there for years.
The floors are very cool because I have never seen those floors. I mean, have they been just buried underneath there for decades probably?
I believe when Pines was there, I think they were covered underneath some sort of carpet.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a pretty nice surprise when we pulled everything up and polished them up. They're just beautiful. There's no way we would have been able to put something like that in. So it makes for a good story. We're able to tell our guests, and it, you know, there's some marks in the floor too. I don't know how those got there, but it has a ton of character.
It does have a lot of character. Yeah.
So it's, you know, even though we did our restaurant is a you know, modern build out, I would say for Park Ridge, and it's pretty unique to the area. So it was definitely nice to leave some of the, you know, the old characteristics of it, and it's definitely fun to tell people.
It's a very, very cool place. Great food. Tell us a little bit about the menu.
So we specialize in pizza. We do a New Haven style crust, which is obviously New Haven style or New Haven, Connecticut. It's pretty popular on the East Coast. Characteristically, it has a little bit of char on the crust, real nice crispiness on the outside, chewy in the middle. Not a perfect circle when it comes to those pizzas. They're a little bit oblong. It's just not a style that you see too much in Chicago, and it's really fantastic. We really pride ourselves on our pizza.
Mashed potato and bacon, meatball and ricotta, goat cheese and grape. I mean, you got some really unique things here.
There's definitely some unique specialty pizzas. Those are, you mentioned a couple of our best sellers. And then we also have, you know, our menu is not huge, but we do everything in-house. We wanted to keep it focused and keep a smaller menu so we could be proud of everything that we were putting down in front of
our guests.
I like
that. When I walk into a restaurant with 500 things on your menu, nothing's good. What's your specialty, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I've had your salmon BLT. I know it's people are obviously in Lent, and you got pepper and egg sandwiches. You got grilled cheese and tomato soup. I mean, there's some good comfort food.
Definitely.
There as well.
We're actually running a couple of specials on the weekend all through leading up to Easter, some cod, some fish tacos that come with a little bit of red cabbage and some pickled onions, some chipotle mayo. They're fantastic. And then
nice.
Also just a classic fish and chips that we're doing as an entree. So in addition to the pizza's obviously vegetarian, no lard in the dough. So lots of good options for Lent. And then
you got brunch too on the weekends.
We do. Brunch goes, it's on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We do a specific brunch menu. Everything is plated, and then we feature the Tito's Bloody Mary bar. So the bar is actually complimentary, so you can just order the drink and doctor
and
it up
it
as
up.
Much as you want. Yeah,
love
yeah,
that.
It's,
love
it's,
that.
It's been a big hit so far.
Biscuits and gravy are great. The eggs are great. The bacon is fabulous. I think
bacon.
That's Tom's favorite. Bacon. Yeah, he's all over the bacon.
Like bacon pizza.
We do our plank bacon in house with a little bit of brown sugar and then some fresh cracked black pepper. We use it on a number of things. It goes on the pizza. It's on the salmon BLT, and Bacon's definitely one of our guest favorite items for sure.
And I think my favorite drink, and I've only been there a couple times, is Apollo Creed, which is kind of like your old fashioned.
it's a Manhattan, and it's made with Whistle Pig rye and a little bit of Carpano Antica, which is a premium Italian vermouth. All of our cocktails are actually named after Rocky characters, so it's kind of a fun.
That's awesome.
So if people come by, they can work their way through all the Rocky characters, and then
that's great.
Draft beer is also one of our specialties. Everything that we pour is Illinois beer. If it wasn't made within 40 miles of the restaurant, we will not pour it. So
very cool.
And
again, Holtz in Park Ridge. It's where the old Pines Menwear shop is. Holtz in Park Ridge, 43 South Prospect. HoltzParkRidge.com. And again, Brad has been kind enough to also leave us with a couple of $50 gift cards, and we're going to give those away during our 9 o'clock hour to some callers who have some questions for our experts, and I appreciate that as well, pal.
We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for having us.
All right. Thank you, Brad. News is next, 720 WGN. Hey, it's Dave Flyer with you on 720 WGN, in for Lou Manfredini. My headphones fell out of the little plug, and I heard nothing. It's all good. We're here live. It's all
so
fabulous.
Funny. It was so loud in here. I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm blowing these people's ears out. I realized that I didn't take it out.
I could see you, and I knew you weren't sleeping. Because I thought,
napping.
Well, maybe he fell asleep.
I was having my Bloody Mary. I was sipping that, having my bacon.
I'm, like, jamming out to Jason Derulo in here. Like, wow, this is a great song.
And I sent the guys on a union break. So they're just kind of hanging out in the green room now. Very good. It's Dave in for Lou Manfredini. I'm Mr. Fix-It Show on 720 WGN. So some people, you know, put their grill away for the winter, and some just grill all year round. But you know what? You can just fire it up without you can't just fire it up without giving your grill a good cleaning and replacing some parts to keep your grill in top shape for years to come. And joining us is the guy who's going to break it all down for us, as he does with me throughout the year, and that is Kevin Coleman. He's Weber's Grill Master, who inspires average grillers to become backyard heroes. Good morning to you, Kevin, and glad to have you back with us.
Dave, it's not a holiday weekend in Chicago if we're not spending time talking about grilling or maintenance.
What is this? Is this a holiday? Oh, it's Valentine's Day. Oh, this is so nice that we're spending Valentine's Day together, Kevin. I love it. I love it. Hey, so the best way to keep your grill clean will mean, you know, your grill, whatever you have a charcoal or a gas grill. I mean, you're going to obviously extend the life of your grill.
It's just like a car. You have to maintain it. And for a lot of us in Chicago, we're not grilling. Myself with 46 grills in my backyard. I'm not
46 grills. That is crazy. You got some vintage grills though too, don't you?
We have some old stuff. We have some new stuff. So to keep everything completely pristine is a challenge. But it's times like this, and it's 10 degrees. We're going to get home from here, and we're going to cook. Once the weather turns a little bit nicer, then there's going to be a pretty deep clean going to happen to the grills that I've used the most during this holiday season.
You know, I had a friend of mine tell me last weekend, and his garage is heated, but it's connected to the house. But he said last weekend he just took this time, because this is what you do in the wintertime, because I feel like we got like 8 to 10 weeks left before better weather kind of gets here, is he just pulled his grill in his garage and started tearing it apart and cleaning it up.
And that's a perfect idea. Normally what I'll do is I'll try to do it in the fall right before winter comes.
And I'll pick
like 3 or 4 grills that I'm going to try to focus on using in the wintertime. And then once it gets nice, that's a perfect time to get out in the garage. If it's heated, clean the insides out, get your warm soapy water, get your mild scouring pad, clean all that excess residue out. So that way when it comes springtime and it hits and the weather's beautiful, which you're saying it's going to be like 80s, you're ready to fire up your grills and have some fun in the backyard.
I was reminded, of course, it's not only Valentine's Day weekend, it's President's Day weekend. So that's the official holiday that we're here hanging out talking about grilling. There you go. All right, so how do you clean? Let's start with the charcoal grill. What do you really need to get this done, and what should you be doing?
So normally the best approach is take everything out and get a look at what's going on inside. Weber has some great cleaners that we've licensed out to that clean the inside of your grills really well. So we have a great cleaner, perfect for the inside of the grill. You spray that down, let it sit. And this is a tip for people as they spray it and they want to just clean it right after. Let it sit for about, let's say, 3 to 5 minutes. That should start to get underneath some of that grease and debris that's been put in there. Then go over it with a mild scouring pad if you need to. The worst thing you can do is spray it and then try to clean it right after, because it's not going to get down onto that schmutz.
Well, there's moisture and grease that bakes itself inside. It's like a carbonized grease, right?
Yes.
So that you got to, you know, really get that steel brush in there and really kind of almost just scrape that off. It just comes off easily.
It does come off. It's carbonized grease, and if it's there, that means you're using the grill, which is what we like. The best thing to use is use a Weber stainless steel brush, and I know, yes, I work for Weber, and we want to sell brushes, but we test our accessories, our brushes, and tools on our grill so it's not going to scratch the porcelain. What could happen if it's not a Weber brush? You could end up scratching that porcelain surface, and once it's scratched, it's going to start rusting out, and it's going to be a problem. So try to make sure you're using a Weber stainless steel brush.
And people might think they're tearing apart part of the grill. It is just that those chunks of that grease that kind of harden on there that you're pulling off. And then the outside of the grill, you know, you want to do something a little less abrasive. You want to do maybe just some soapy water and maybe a terry cloth, not paper towel, because that kind of scratches it up.
The porcelain coating thing, and this is something that Weber's had almost forever, we bake our lids, the porcelain on it, about 1,500 degrees. So it's not going to scratch unless you take something very abrasive to
gotcha.
It. So you could use the grate cleaner on the outside. We have an exterior cleaner that does a really good job, or a mild glass cleaner that will remove most of the grease and debris on the outside. And you can actually use a paper towel. With stainless steel, now you want to focus on using a terry cloth, because the cardboard in the paper towel is going to put scratches in the surface of your stainless steel, and you don't want to do that. So a terry cloth for stainless, paper towel for the porcelain coated areas.
What about the bottom now? Now that you're lifting the grate off and you're taking out charcoal and so forth, there's like a 3-blade system in there, right?
Yep. There's a one-touch system down there that makes cleaning our grills extremely easy. We love that. And so you want to rotate that, get most of the debris down, then use your grate cleaner or your warm soapy water and a mild scouring pad, clean all the blades inside, clean any excess debris that's in there. And what's important for that is we want that blade system to move, because that's what allows the intake of oxygen inside of our charcoal grills, which will then bring the temperatures up. So that's a vital point, is making sure you keep that bottom portion clean.
Any replacement parts? Is there anything like routinely you need to do, or just as things get old, or is this pretty much lifetime type stuff?
It's hard to say, because people, I've had my grill for 10 years and I haven't replaced anything. Myself, yeah. I can replace thing every, let's say, 5 to 7 years, because I use it a lot.
Right.
So that's why it's good in the spring, take the stuff out. Now, we're lucky because our retailers, like our Aces, our True Values, our Home Depots, have replacement parts that are ready available. And so that's one great thing, is if you notice something's wrong, head on down to the hardware store. They're going to have the parts. Pick them up, get them back to your house, and get grilling.
What about gas grills? What do we have to do? Now, I have a Summit, and I do grill year-round, because I miss it. You know, I'd say I take a couple months off, but Super Bowl Sunday, we threw stuff on the grill, and I know I've got some cleaning to do. I could see it deep down inside. So what's the basics for cleaning your gas grill?
Same thing with your charcoal grill. You want to take the grates out, take the flavorizer bars out. You want to look at the burner tubes, because you might see some scaling that's occurring. The burner tube ports get a little bit smaller. You want to use a brand new stainless steel brush, and you want to clean some of that stuff off, because the performance over time can drop a little bit. When you start cleaning the burner tubes off, that's going to open up those ports again, bring the temperatures back up. Check the flavorizer bars. Those might need a little bit of that grate cleaner on there, scouring pad. Same with the cooking grates. And the more stuff that you clean off that grill, the performance of it's going to start going back up to when it was originally.
So see, the burners, too, you got to be careful when you're brushing those, because there's all those little holes in there. You don't want to brush that stuff into the holes. You want to kind of brush it away from it and out to the bottom.
Well, it's kind of like brushing your teeth. You want to make sure that you're going with the grain of the burner tube. So if you're at a Summit like yourself and they're in front of you, you want to go side to side. You don't want to go up and down. Now, you might get some of that excess debris in the tubes, and that's okay. The most important is you want to make sure all the ports are uniform, so that way the grill's heating up correctly, cooking food correctly, and you're getting the best results when it's done.
You got like dark brown stains like on parts of the cover. Is that just simple as just like wiping it down with like some soapy water type of thing? What if you're having a hard time getting that off? What if you really messed it up?
We have a really nice exterior cleaner that you can use, and we also have a stainless steel polish that you can use. And the key to this, Dave, and again, just like cleaning the inside of your grill, you want to spray it down and let it sit for about 3 to 5 minutes. You can go longer, which is going to help, but a lot of people spray it on, they try to clean it off, and it doesn't do a very good job. Be patient. So spray one area, spray another one, come back to the original one, clean that one up, and then finally finish up with the one that you sprayed last.
Now, there's also a ton of accessories you can get. I know once you get into kind of the grilling season, you kind of forget about that, and you're just lighting it up and throwing it out there. But maybe now is a good time to kind of go out and see all the very cool things you can do with your grill. There's just all kinds of accessories to cook different things.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's just like baseball season's right around the corner. People are excited about the Cubs and the Sox going to start playing. This is the time that you could be researching the accessory that you need. If you go on Weber.com, great website to get all that information. You can go on to Weber Nation, which is a blog, which I have a bunch of stuff on. A lot of other writers that are great information that allows you to kind of figure out what you want to do, your spring training grilling game plan. And then you're going to be ready once the weather cracks to get the grill started up and pretty much cook the best food you've done maybe ever.
You know, you've got griddles, you've got pizza stones, which I've never thought about making a pizza on there, but that's pretty cool too. But you get all kinds of very cool stuff. Like you wok, so you can make some good vegetables and kind of stir fry them right up on the grill.
The pizza stone is awesome for breads, for cakes, for pizza. The wok I love because I can do chilies, I can braise things, I can do stir fries, I've done risottos. There's a ton of great things that I would rather be outside cooking than inside in my house. My wife screams and yells because I make a mess inside. If I can get outside, I can just use my blower, blow it into the grass one cares.
I like it.
And the food tastes much better, and I can probably have a little bit more beer outside when I'm doing that.
So. I like it. I like your thought process there. All right, so it is Valentine's Day weekend, so we're going to give away, folks, on the contest line, a Red Weber Q grill. First of all, tell us what the Q is all about.
So the Q is one of the best portable grills you're going to find, and I actually have seven of them at home. And when I'm
of course you do.
Well, of course I do, but because of the porcelain enamel cast iron grate inside, it retains heat so well. I've tailgated for 100 people at Soldier Field on three of them.
Wow.
You don't think it's that big, but it packs a ton of power. What's cool this year is we have a bunch of different colors out there that really appeal to the younger generations, the older generations. You can really custom fit it to what you want. But one of the absolute best grills that Weber has out.
And there's different colors of the grill. So if you're a Northwestern fan, you can get the purple one. If you're a Bears fan, you get the orange one. And Cubs, you can take the red or the blue one. That's what I find kind of cool about this, because it kind of you can hold your team colors outside too.
Yeah, there's almost any team out there you can find a color that we can match with our Q series, and that makes it fun because tailgating is huge. You know, here in Chicago, it's a big thing. So being able to kind of show your personality and your team loyalty with our Q series is awesome.
All right, so we're going to take caller 591-7000, 312-591-7000. Here's the question that you have to answer. When grilling a steak, let's say it's a 1-inch filet, grilling steak, how long do you grill each side? 10 to 12 minutes, 8 to 10 minutes, 6 to 8 minutes. So again, when you're grilling a steak, let's say a 1-inch filet, how long do you grill each side? 10 to 12, 8 to 10, 6 to 8, 312-591-7000 for a Red Weber Q grill. We'll do that next on 720 WGN. Good morning, Chicagoland. It's Dave Plyer in for Lou this morning on the Mr. Fix-It Show on 720 WGN. And right now we're talking to Kevin Coleman from Weber Grill on getting your grill ready for spring. And we had a question. When grilling a steak, this is for a Weber Q grill, a red one. When grilling a steak, say a 1-inch filet, how long do you grill each side? 10 to 12 minutes, 8 to 10, or 6 to 8? And I believe Nancy might have the answer. Nancy, good morning to you.
Good morning. I think it's 6 to 8.
You got it. You won yourself a Weber Q grill.
Oh, great.
Yes, enjoy it. And get it out there before, you can do it all winter long. It's going to be a lot of fun. Lindsay's going to get your information. Have a great Saturday.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So if you got some grilling questions for Kevin, we'll take them. 312-981-7200. Now, grilling can be year-round, but when it's cold, it's good to do some good hearty food on the grill. You do a rib roast on the grill.
I do. I pretty much do everything on a grill, and rib roast is one of those great things that set the grill up correctly. And what's cool is Weber has an app. Well, I have a couple apps. One's On the Grill, and then another one is Weber Grills. And they will actually give you the grilling guide for that. So with the steak question, you can go in, you can push the thickness, you can say how many bones are in your roast, how many pounds. Set your grill up the correct way, especially in the wintertime when it's cold. Maybe give it an extra 5 or 10 minutes to preheat correctly. That's going to help with getting the food on and getting it off as quick as possible. But doing a prime rib on a grill, especially on holiday time or for Valentine's Day, is one of the best things that you can possibly cook, at least in my book.
What about your ribs? I love your barbecue ribs. And I know you like you make your own rub, don't you?
I do make my own rub, and I do make my own sauce. We use about 17 different spices in the barbecue rub that I have, and that complements the barbecue sauce. So I'm going to use a sweet rub. I'm going to use a little bit spicier of a sauce.
So you're doing both.
I'm doing both, yeah.
Okay, all
right. Just a light glaze. But, and that's the thing for ribs, Dave, just a real quick point. And people ask, when's the best time to sauce them? And usually it's like 20 minutes before they come off. So that's when I'll put my sauce on. The heat from the smoker will actually pull some of the moisture out and give a nice thick glaze to those ribs, and they're absolutely spectacular.
I overcook them a little bit. So how long do you really have to cook the ribs?
For ribs, it's interesting. If I go for an internal temperature about 190. Because the meat's going to come off the bone, but it's not going to be too tough. People like 185 competition world where I judge. You want 185 so it leaves a bite mark. My family, most people like fall off the bone, and that's going to be about 190 to 195.
And, some people who are celebrating Easter, you actually do a ham on the grill.
We do a ham and we do a turkey. And my dad and my daughters are huge fans of ham. So we'll put that on the smoker, take about 2 hours.
On the smoker, yep.
Because what I'm trying to do, and even on a kettle grill, I'm trying to make sure that we keep the temperatures low. Because with a ham, it doesn't have that much moisture. So if you can keep those temperatures low, baste it a little bit with the applesauce, it's going to come out really flavorful. Now, one cheat I'll give your fans is they call it the Texas crutch, and you can use that when you do your ribs and pork shoulder and brisket. But I'll actually wrap the ham after about the first hour, and that helps loosen up that ham a little bit, and it also steams it so it keeps it nice and moist and tender.
Very cool. Well, you can catch Kevin Coleman at Weber.com, and all of his blogs and his recipes are on there as well. And for more info on, you know, some replacement parts and all that other good stuff, you can go to Weber.com. Kevin, always a pleasure, man.
Dave, thanks for having us.
And if you need some replacement parts or if you want to explore some new accessories, Ace Hardware is your grilling headquarters. And the helpful hardware folks have given us two $25 gift cards to give away. And we'll do that to our first callers calling in with questions for our experts after the news at 9. All coming up next on 720 WGN. It's Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with our team of experts here on 720 WGN. We're taking your calls, questions, problems, issues, 312-981-7200. I've got a lot of stuff to give away. I've got a couple of Ace Hardware $25 gift cards to give away for some Weber grill accessories. I've got two gift certificates, $50 gift certificates for Holtz Restaurant in Park Ridge. And we'll give those away to our callers that have questions for our experts. And joining us today again is Joe Carone. He's the HVAC tech with iwantsmart.com. Joe Donahue, Electricians Local 134. Jim Majerowitz, Training Director, Journeyman Plumbers UA Local 130. Tom Nordine, Executive Director of the Chicagoland Labor's Training and Apprentice Fund. Gentlemen, welcome back. Did you have a nice little union break out there?
Sure did.
Some bloodies and good stuff. All right, fantastic. All right, we got our first caller of the hour. This is Steve from Hampshire. You're on 720 WGN. Good morning to you, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. What do you got, pal?
Well, so this is on my outside lights by the garage doors. And the other day I'm coming home and it's dusk and it's on a timer. We didn't have the timer on because it was summer. We usually don't put it on. But as I'm coming in, it's dusk, and I notice that the light is flickering very dimly. But it's flickering. It's getting juice. And I've never heard of something like that. The switch was off, even though it's a timer. You know, we had to manually hit the button to put power to the light. So there was no power coming to it, and it was flickering.
Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, when you turn it on, does it flicker then?
No, it just turns on. It's a CFL.
It just turns on, but okay, it doesn't flicker, though, when you turn it on, right?
That's correct. It's a steady light.
Okay, it sounds like something's wrong with your, timer you have?
I mean, it
works fine when you just turn it on, right?
Yes, it does.
And then you're bypassing that timer, but when you, when it's on the timer, it's flickering.
Okay.
What do you think? I mean, that's the only thing I could see the problem with the whole thing. Usually, with a flickering light, it's either the socket that the bulb is in, or a loose connection. But you have a timer. Is it a digital timer or is it just a mechanical timer?
Yeah, it is a digital.
Yeah, it sounds like the timer. That sounds like the culprit to me.
Okay. Hey, and as long as I got the experts, I mind if I do a quick rant?
Sure. What do you got?
Hey, And this is regarding, you know, I'm thinking that the world is really taking a turn for the worse. We got the smart TV. When I turn it on, it doesn't come on. Yeah, I got to sit there for a few minutes for the thing to come on.
Like it's 1965.
Yeah. And, you know, when I turn on my lights, no, the lights don't come on. You know, you got to stand there in the dark while the lights come on. And we just bought this new refrigerator. When I open up the refrigerator, the light's not on. I got to stand there, wait for the light. I want to see what I'm going to eat. You know, as long as you guys are plugged into the experts there, tell them, come on, when we turn on a switch, we want our stuff to come on.
Well, that's the problem with smart stuff. It has to think about it.
Yeah. First, exactly. Hey, Steve, how about a $25 Ace Hardware gift card?
Oh, I'd really appreciate it. It's my favorite store.
All right, excellent. Thanks, Steve. Hang on the line. Lindsay will get to you. All right, pal?
Thanks.
All right. Let's look here. Let's look at Mary. You're on 720 WGN from the South Burbs. What's your question?
Yes, I have a question for the electrician. And I'm an older woman, and I'm not very good with, you know, I have a nice little house in a small town. Now, I want to change, I blew some fuses. Do I turn off the electricity to change the fuse, or will I kill myself, you know, trying to just change the fuse with the electricity on?
What kind of fuses are they?
Are like they 15 breakers? Amp fuses.
The ones you screw into the panel?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, those are good fuses. Why did the fuse blow, you know?
Because I'm heating with electric space heaters, and I overloaded a socket, I believe. You know, I overloaded one area. So
okay, when you're changing one of those, you really don't want any load on it. So you unplug everything that was into it.
Now, should I turn the total electricity off in the whole house?
On that panel, you'd have to pull the thing out on the top, the main, right?
Well, I tell you the truth, I've been working out of town, so I haven't been down there and looked at it, but I know that what, you know, but so what did you say again? What was that? Do I have to?
Well, there's a main at the top of the panel, and it has a couple of fuses in the back of those larger fuses.
Okay.
And you really don't have to do that. But probably the best thing to do would be just to take the load off the circuit down the line where you have the heater
plugged
in.
What does that mean, take the load off the circuit?
Unplug your heater. Unplug your heater.
Unplug everything when
exactly. And so when you put it in, you won't get a little spark.
So I don't have to turn off the electricity in the whole house?
No, you do not.
But okay.
You should take everything off the line that fuse is feeding.
Yes, I think I did already, and I've used extension cords and plugged into other, you know, heavy duty 12 gauge cords. But well, thank you so much for your information. I really enjoy the show.
And Mary, hang on a second. We'll help you buy that fuse. I'll get you a gift card for Ace Hardware and AceHardware.com.
Oh, that would be wonderful. We have a wonderful Ace Hardware out. I'm actually close to Pontiac, so we have an Ace Hardware up there.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Mary. All right. Let's see. We've got Eli calling from Arlington Heights. Eli, you're on 720 WGN. What's your question, pal? And good morning
to
you.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm shop downsizing, and I'm shopping for an old bungalow in Chicago. And it's got 6 rooms on the first floor and 4 rooms on the second floor. And talking to the realtor, there's only one thermostat, and it's on the first floor. And while I was in there, the temperature on the second floor, there was a thermometer showed at 69 degrees. And, of course, they told me that you don't need a thermostat on a second floor since the building only has one furnace. And I thought that was unusual. And my question is, does it cost anything extra to heat that second floor apartment since there's no thermostat there? And a realtor says, well, the owner says the heat goes through the walls and it heats the apartment. And, you know, the other day when I was there, the temperature was 69 degrees. And it was interesting. And my question is, does it cost anything to heat that second floor apartment in this Polish tile bungalow that's 90-plus years old in Chicago?
Joe?
So what you're telling me is that you have one furnace that's heating a first floor and a second floor of a house, correct?
Yes, a 1.5-story brick house.
Are you separating this, or you're going to make one an apartment and the other one?
It is a legal apartment. They showed me it was legalized by the city of Chicago. It's a legal city of Chicago apartment.
Okay, so
Joe, why don't you, Joe, if you could find out if it is a who's that, Eli? Is it a furnace or is it a steam or hot water?
It's a hot water furnace. It's
okay,
a hot
it's
water
not a
heater.
Furnace, then. Okay.
And they just put in a new one, a Weil McLean, and that's their selling point. And of course, the area is an up and coming area that we call Bucktown West.
One thing you could do is, does your apartment have radiators in the?
Yes, radiators.
Okay, you could put separate controls on the radiators that will be or turn on and introduce hot water to that room based off temperature.
But my next question is, the thermostat on the first floor then will have to be elevated, and then to me, wouldn't that cost more money to heat that building?
Yes, it would cost potentially it would cost a little bit more to heat the building, but what you could do is if the boiler, you can run the boiler at a certain water temperature, and then when the water in the boiler reaches a certain temperature, it shuts off. And then as the radiators, thermostats open up and start introducing that hot water into that room, it'll lower the boiler water temperature, and then the boiler will come on again to produce hot water.
So that what you're telling me, it does cost extra to heat that building.
If you're doing it the way you're doing it, yes.
Okay.
And you know what I'm going to do since you're talking thermostats? I'm going to give you an April Air event-based thermostat brought to you by the leaders in Chicagoland's indoor comfort, American Weathermakers. Take control of your temperature and the air you breathe. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Stay on the line, Eli, and we'll get that to you.
Thank you.
All right, my pleasure. All right, we're going to take your calls and texts, a little bit more of that. 312-981-7200. We'll do that next on 720 WGN. Good morning, Chicagoland. It's Dave Plyer and for Lou Manfredini on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with our very own experts here on 720 WGN. We're taking your calls, your texts, 312-981-7200. In this segment, we'll give away a gift card for Holtz in Park Ridge, a brand new restaurant on 43 South Prospect, a great new place, and we'll give that away in the next few minutes. And this segment is also sponsored by Ace Hardware and PermaSeal Basement Systems. Gentlemen, let's take a look at our first call here of the segment, and let's talk to Mary. Mary, you're on 720 WGN. What's going on, Mary?
That would be me. I live in a condo, and I have a door that's quite heavy that opens onto the common area, and it's sagging, and it's not closing properly. And, of course, it's an issue with the fire department now that they've come through. So I'm wondering, how would I get that door lifted somewhat? I don't know if we have to take it off the hinges or
Tom, what's your
how
thought?
Do I approach that?
Yeah, is this your entry door to your unit?
Is this the entry door?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, without seeing it, I can't tell you exactly what's wrong with it, but if it's sagging, and you're saying on the latch side, it doesn't close properly, or it's sticking up
exactly.
against the frame?
It catches there.
Yeah, so it's coming loose off the hinge side. So without seeing it, you're going to have to get somebody that, a carpenter, that can come in and go back and reinforce whatever is weakened.
It's not handling the weight. Yeah, I wondered if we had to take it off the hinges, because that would be a big job. Anyway, I thought you guys might be too techy to answer this for me, but I will pursue that.
Okay, thanks, Mary, for the call. Appreciate it. All right, let's see here. Glenn from Arlington Heights, good morning to you. What's your question for our gentleman here?
Yeah, there's been a lot of transitions of light bulbs from the incandescent to CFLs to LEDs. What's the future for light bulbs? Are we going to just see LEDs and eliminate the incandescents, or is there something better than the LED coming out?
And incandescents are supposed to be gone. LEDs are the wave of the future. They're very low wattage, and they're very durable, and they last a long time.
I mean, I don't know if you guys are seeing this as you're working in homes and stuff, people replacing all their bulbs, but, you know, we're certainly doing that. You got to kind of do it room by room, but, you know, they're saying that, you know the wattage of these bulbs, you can, this light bulb will last for, you know, 22 years. I mean, it could be 25,000 hours, and you could save a couple hundred bucks over the life of the bulb and even changing them again. I mean, the first things I think we did is the outside of the house, so we don't have to keep changing those because they're on and off all day long. But really doing it room by room. But I think LED is absolutely the way of the future. And I know Ace Hardware, who's our sponsor of the hour, has a massive selection in store, and they'll tell you exactly what you need to replace because it's a little different, you know, from wattage to lumens, but they kind of do the conversion chart for you to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I would tell you that we just changed all of our lighting, 100% of it, to LED at the training center, and it reduced our lighting bill by 40%.
So the whole idea behind this is the electrical infrastructure will be less taxed when we get rid of these lighting loads.
And there's different options too. There's a warm light, and then there's a more of a cool light that you can pick too. So the cool light's more like the GE Reveal that's been out there for a long time. So you can, they talk about it's the temperature of the light, but it's really what the light looks like, whether it's a warmer light or cooler light in the room. But there's conversion charts at Ace that can tell you exactly what to buy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, let's see here. Bill, you're on 720 WGN. What's the question? Bill, do we still have you, buddy?
Oh, hello.
Hey, Bill. What's going on?
Hi. I missed the Weber guy, but I had a question. I have two Webers. One's a Genesis propane, and the other one's a 310 Weber with natural gas. And I was wondering which one. I heard that propane burns hotter than natural gas. Is that true? Do you guys know?
Yes, propane burns hotter than natural gas. It also has a more of a BTU content to it. So propane grills are kind of popular.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering about that. Thanks a lot. I enjoy your show.
All right, thank you. Thanks so much, Bill. Frank, you're on 720 WGN. You got a sub pump question?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My sub pump, it's about 4 years old. I'm just wondering, when should I replace it? With this crazy weather we're having here, before it goes on. I have a watchdog backup on that pump, by the way.
If there's no need to go in there and, like a replacement schedule of 5 years, 10 years. The main thing is that you make sure that the pit is clean and that you cycle it periodically. And then since you do have the backup, you shouldn't have any problems with that. But you just need to make sure that it's cycling periodically so that it doesn't freeze up. If you leave a pump down in a pit and the pit drain evaporates and dries out and stuff, a lot of times the pumps will freeze up, and when it comes to use them, they don't function. Oh. But if you exercise the pump regularly, and it should last indefinitely.
Very, very good. What do you guys recommend about the whole house gas power generators? I was thinking about getting one of those too.
If you do have power failures where you're at, it could save what you have in your freezer, refrigerator, and also it could save your basement from flooding. And
any brands that you recommend?
There's Generac? No one in particular brand, but I turn it over to.
No. you really have to research those and see what would be best for your home.
But I'm sure.
Right. You would really need a professional to install that. And you could call the Electrical Contractors Association, and they have all kinds of contractors that do that type of work. The number is 708-531-0022. And they can give you an automatic transfer switch on your service for as soon as that power goes off, that generator kicks on and your house will be fine.
When you put a generator in, you're not looking up for a whole house generator. You're looking for a generator that's going to open your garage door, that's going to run your heat,
your refrigerator,
the basics. Your freezer, basics and stuff. You don't want it's not too economically feasible to put one in to run your whole house. You just need it for as it's called, an emergency backup generator, just for the garage door so you could get your car out. You have an alarm system.
We can do that, though.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Contact Electrical Contractors.
Frank, hang on the line. I'm going to give you a $50 gift card to Holtz and Park Ridge on 43 South Prospect. It's holtzparkridge.com. Great new restaurant. Okay, pal?
Oh, sounds great. Can't wait to have this Bloody Mary.
Okay. Thanks, Frank. Hang on the line. All right. We'll take your calls and texts next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer in for Lou Manfredini on a Saturday morning on the Mr. Fix-It Show, along with our team of experts here on 720 WGN. We're taking your calls, your texts, your questions, your problems, your issues. 312-981-7200. Guys, look outside. There's actually some sun out there today. It's looking pretty good.
It looks beautiful.
I like it. I like it.
Even though it's not.
Even though it's a little chilly, exactly. Hey, Bob, you're on 720 WGN. What's your question for our experts this morning?
Well, good morning. This would not be a day to be out doing this work, but it has to do with gutters. I had some gutter work done several years ago, and then recently, like I guess this last summer, my roof was replaced, and the roofer said that the gutter work did not include replacement, and I think I'm using the right term, the fascia. Is the fascia that little 2 or 3 inch material that that extends down from the roof line and is and overlaps the gutter?
Tom?
Is that what that is?
Yes, it is. And are you talking about the flashing that comes from the roof into the gutter?
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. There is some type of a material that did not get replaced, and the roofer was saying you may want to have that done because if there's any backup of water or whatever, with the flashing being old, material could get up. I mean, water could get up behind there, and then it gets up underneath your roof line and could come in through the house or whatever. I'm just wondering if that indeed is the case. One, should I have had that, or should the company that did the gutter replacement, should they have replaced that flashing as part of the gutter work? And or two, now that if it needs to be replaced, what's that going to do with regard to having installed the roof, and is that going to mess with the security or the solidity of the roof, being leak-proof, et cetera?
Yeah, it should have been done by the roofer at the time of the roof being replaced. It needs to go underneath the few tabs at the lowest part of the roof before it rolls off the roof and into the gutter. You can get it in, but it's going to take a professional roofer to do that, and I wouldn't suggest doing it any other way.
What is the fascia? Because that's a term that I remember hearing as I've been talking to these people. What's the fascia?
As you come down the slope of your roof and roll off the roof, the vertical face is the fascia. That's behind the gutters.
Okay, I think it was that was not replaced.
Well, that doesn't have to be replaced, and it wouldn't have anything to do with water that may overflow from the gutter and back up into the shingles.
Okay,
but
all right.
You were on the right track when you were talking about that piece of counter flashing that would go into the gutter off the roof.
Okay.
That needs to be in place.
Okay. All right, so where it's gapping, like it's peeling away from what would be the gutter backing, I guess, the backside of the gutter, where it's peeling away, that needs to be solidified and or secured up against the gutter.
It needs to be flashed.
Yeah. Okay. All righty.
Thanks for the call, Bob.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, pal. Joe, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question about a hot water tank.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling. I purchased a new Rheem 40-gallon water tank and put it in, and now it seems like I'm having a problem with, I guess it's called stacking, where at first I get really hot water, and then slowly it starts getting just warm and then lukewarm and then cold.
Jim?
Yeah. What's going to happen with a water heater, and it's going to stratify like that, where the top of the heater is going to have the highest temperature water, and as the water goes down and as you drain it, the temperature slowly is going to decrease. Now, where are you having the problems with the extreme hot water coming out? Is it a shower issue, or is it
right in the tub when I start putting water in the tub?
So when
it's real hot.
So when you're filling the bathtub, not a shower, right?
Right. Right.
So when you're filling the bathtub, you're going to get that hottest water. And because bathtubs aren't required to have thermostatic mixing valves on them, only shower valves are required to have thermostatic mixing valves.
Right. Right?
So at that point, as you draw water out of that heater, it's going to start out hot. And then as the more water you draw, you're going to get a lower temperature. And, if you have a 50-gallon heater, you're probably only going to have about 35 gallons of readily available hot water in that. It only stores about 70% readily available hot water. So when you fill up a bathtub, and it's a 40-gallon heater. You fill up a bathtub with a 40-gallon heater, that's about the extent of that heater. So you're taking it from it's a high temperature all the way down to basically cold water coming into it.
All right. So that's just normal, right?
That's normal, you know, and if you could live with that, you know, adjust your lifestyle to that, that's fine. Or you could have a, you know, get a larger heater in the future that, you know, will stay more constant and give you more water and it won't cool all the way off.
Right. All right. Thank you so much for your call. Thanks, guys.
Okay. All right. So, Joe?
Yes.
Joe, you still there? Hey, I've got a gift certificate for Holtz and Park Ridge on 43 South Prospect. $50 gift card. HoltzParkRidge.com. Great new restaurant. Can you hang on a line, buddy, and we'll get your information?
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Sounds fantastic. I'm sure I'll go there.
All right. Thanks. Hold on one second, pal. All right. We've got Ronnie on 720 WGN. Good morning to you, Ronnie. What's your question?
Hi. It's nice hearing all your expertise, even though I can't fix things. But I have a 1929 bungalow and a radiator in the bathroom that's peeling and cruddy, and I'm wondering about painting it.
Can you paint that, guys? Without?
Well, over the years, a lot of times they would paint it with the silver paint that was real thin and wouldn't peel off so much, and the heat transfer wouldn't really affect anything. And then... And there's really no problem with that, but then when they start putting the old oil and latex paint on there that's thick, it starts building up after a time period, and then it does start chipping off, you know.
Well, the paint that's on there looks like the original, that silver that you're talking about.
Right.
And so do they still sell that?
I don't know if in Illinois they still sell that. You'd have to go to a commercial paint store and see if that is still available. All right.
Are you saying the other paint, that I should not use the other paint?
Well, you know, that paint is most likely because of the it's going to hydrate out. I mean, the water's going to come out of it, and especially on that type of thing that's going to heat up so much. The likelihood of latex paint chipping becomes higher, but they may have. Today, there is a wide variety of latex paints out there, and they start getting costly, but they have applications for that. And if you would go to a commercial paint store and explain the situation to them, or. You wanna,
okay.
You know,
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate Bye-bye. It. All right. And Milt from Northbrook, you've got a question for our experts. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. I have a electrical problem. A hanging ceiling light has three bulbs in it, and one bulb I thought was burnt out. I replaced it, but the bulb was not really burnt out. I tried another fixture, and I believe that the socket in the light fixture is bad. How can I replace that one socket from the – or do I have to take the whole ceiling light down and take it apart completely?
Well, some of the time we screw in these light bulbs too hard, and we keep on pushing that little brass tab down inside the socket, and okay. It gets to the point where it's so far down that we can't make contact with the that tab anymore. So the thing to do on a tab like that is to turn off the switch, of course, take out the light bulb, and with a long-nosed plier, just grab that tab inside and pull it out a little bit, and then screw the light bulb in and see if it works. If it's it may not be making contact on that tab.
Okay, so you don't believe I have to take the whole thing apart then?
No, I would do that first before anything. And if worse comes to worse, you can replace sockets. They do sell socket replacements.
Okay, it's something I could do at I'm pretty handy. I could probably do it myself, or should I have an electrical supply outfit to take care of it?
No, you know what? You probably could take a stab at it, and if it goes bad, you can always buy a new fixture.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, Mill. Appreciate it. John, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning to you. John from Elgin, you there, pal?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I have a two-car detached garage, and I was I'd like to insulate it. And I was wondering, what is the best type of insulation to use in that? The garage has no ceiling, it's completely open.
Tom, what do you think?
You're going to heat it, correct?
Well, I was thinking of heating it and possibly air conditioning in the summertime.
Okay, so I would strongly recommend it, probably a bat insulation, as long as you're going to heat it. And you're going to have to put something in the up in the ceiling joist to close off the underside of the roof. That's going to take an extreme amount of heat in the summer if you're going to try to cool it. So you should isolate that area and put venting in there to allow the air to move through the attic space.
Okay. Well, the attic area, like I say, there's nothing but rafters up there, and I'm not, I wasn't looking to put a ceiling in there at all.
Well, then, are you relying on the cooling for any specific purpose?
I was considering cooling. I'm not sure what if I would do that right away, but I was thinking that I definitely need some insulation to have heat or cooling, or otherwise my heating and cooling bills would be exorbitant.
You could insulate right to the underside of the roof in between the roof rafters. It's not going to be extremely efficient.
What about using foam insulation?
You can use it, but I would recommend a bat insulation.
A bat insulation?
Yes.
Is that fiberglass? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay, and how much do you think I would need?
Well, you're going to have to measure it. Do you mean in depth?
I mean, as far as thickness or to get a certain R value.
Whatever the thickness of the material is you're putting it between, if the roof rafters are like 2x6, then use the 2x6 bat insulation. And if it's in the walls, you got a 2x4, use the 3.5.
All right, thanks for the call, John. All right, 312-981-7200. Hey, Skokie is the next stop for the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. We partnered with the Chicago Blackhawks for a special broadcast of The Beat from 3 to 7 p.m. from the Blackhawks store at Old Orchard Mall on Saturday, February 20th. Bring your family to celebrate Hockey Weekend across America. First 100 kids are invited for a free skate on the mall's ice rink presented by the Chicago Blackhawks. To learn skating tips from the Blackhawks ice crew and Blackhawks youth hockey team, visit the store and enter the chance to win prizes too. Visit the events page at WGNRadio.com for details. The Hometown Voices Tour is presented by Allstate Chicago's own Good Hands.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
Lindsay, is that it? Is that the end? Oh, my goodness. The Lose Last Call is sponsored by Townstone Financial. And we have time for one quick call. Joanne, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning to you.
Hi.
And what's your call, dear?
Quick question. Our bathtub, when you turn off the water, it still drips for about 10 to 15 seconds after it's, you know, you've closed it. Now, my husband's tried changing the cartridge, and it still drips. And I don't know what we're doing wrong here.
Jim, what do you think?
When you shut a faucet off, the pipe in the walls there in the bathtub, mm-hmm. all right, are full of water.
Right.
And slowly but surely they will drain out. And then it does stop 100% after 15 seconds?
It does. But the other tub doesn't do that, though. So I'm curious.
It might be that it's draining a little bit faster out than the one you have, the way the piping configuration is. And so you can have that where it does drip and then drain out. And it needs to drain out because you don't want standing water in the pipe, you know.
Right.
So it's the right thing that should be happening there.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought there was something wrong. Well, thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate that.
Hey, we're going to hold on to the call. We're going to give you a Luminati's gift certificate.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joan. Just hold on the line, okay?
Thank you.
Well, my thanks to all of you gentlemen for hanging out with us on the Mr. Fix-It show this morning. I want to talk just a little bit about all of you. Joe Carone, tell us a little bit about you. Where we can find you?
You can find me on iwantsmart.com. If you're looking for an HVAC contractor, it's the smart place to find a heating and cooling contractor who will bring you the value to deserve, quality workmanship from a certified technician, and a contractor base you could trust to be there for you today and in the future to come.
Beautiful. Thank you, Joe. Joe Donahue?
Yes, I'd like to thank you for the invitation for us today on behalf of Local Union 134 Electricians Union. And I would like to remind everyone that there's no job too small. You can call the Electrical Contractors Association at 708-531-0022.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Jim Majerowitz?
Yes, I'd like to remind everybody, if you have any plumbing work done in your house, to make sure you insist on a licensed bonded plumbing contractor and licensed plumbers working for them. The Chicagoland Contractors Association phone number is 312-563-9526.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jim. And Tom?
I too want to thank you all for the hospitality. The food and drinks were superb, especially that bacon.
Fabulous.
But I do want to do a shout out to the 15,000 members of LIUNA Chicago Labor's District Council in the 9-county Chicagoland area, and remind them all that we need to get in and focus on the continued education and make yourself a more valuable employee to your employer. And keep yourself safe and people you work around safe as well.
Thank you, Tom. And thank you, gentlemen. And thank you to Lindsay, Bob Ferguson, Veronica Carter. I'll be back tonight on my regular show overnight Saturday, where we'll talk to actor Max Casella from The Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire on the new HBO series Vinyl. It was created by the Rolling Stones' Mick Jagger and directed by Martin Scorsese. So we'll have fun with that. And Lou's back next week. And good morning to Kathy and Judy. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning,
good
Dave.
Morning. I'm excited for Vinyl.
Doesn't that sound like a great show?
Yeah.
I had heard that Mick wanted to talk about almost 40 years of it, and he wanted to do a miniseries. And he thought, well, you know what? The craziest time was 1973, where it was all sex, drugs, rock and roll, and this was really the epitome of that business, and it sounds like a great show.
My God, those are the years I was having babies and making curtains.
And you didn't know a single song, right?
I missed the whole damn thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Have a good one, Dave.
Thank you. You too, ladies.